When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
The Market Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell.
Welcome onto the Market Musings podcast, where today we have a guest who's on for the second time, and it was just under 2 years ago, it was November 2021, that we first spoke to Sean Smith, the CEO of Eden Research, who are a company focused on biopesticides for sustainable agriculture. So it's good to be talking to you again, Sean. Quite a while ago, you were saying earlier you were very surprised, you thought it was only a few weeks ago that we spoke.
Yeah, I think I'm still suffering from some sort of COVID time dilation effect. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, no, time flies when we're having fun. And good morning, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Good to be chatting again. And of course, Kenny is joining us as well, and who was on the original podcast.
Yep, good to have you back on again, Sean. And I was just laughing there when you were talking about, you know, it's 2 years. I mean, when I done that podcast, I was in my 40s, and I'm now in my 50s. So yeah, it's definitely. Definitely hit home for me that it was 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to the club, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. 50's and you're 18. No, I feel like I'm 18 year old. My body doesn't feel like it's 18 years old, but my mind is. So that's the main thing.
Indeed.
It's great to have you back on. And obviously, you know, the last podcast, you know, we talked a lot about yourself, your journey, your career, you know, how you get into this sector. So this podcast, we're going to be more sort of focused on, you know, the actual company and the products and the partnerships. And obviously, you had a successful raise, you know, last week. So before we get on to all that, I think it would be good, you know, just to refresh everybody's minds, you know, what is Eden Research? You know, give us a helicopter overview of the company and what it does.
Sure. No, thank you for that, Kenny. Yeah, the company is actually we're AIM's only listed biopesticide company. We're a company that's solely focused on biopesticides. What that really means for people is we're creating pesticides using biologically oriented approaches, and you know, ultimately the goal is to develop sustainable pesticides that support farmers in professional agriculture and horticulture. Why do that? You know, the main question quite often people have is, well, why do we need pesticides at all? You know, why don't we just ban them? And you even get a good number of NGOs carrying that message forward, and even some regulators thinking that banning pesticides would be a good thing to do. Well, I mean, the main issue obviously is that our planet isn't getting any bigger, and we're not able to grow, you know, anything on Mars or anywhere else that Elon Musk might fancy, ultimately. Yeah, so what that means, and by the way, in the context of carbon emissions and deforestation and land use issues around the world, well, what does that mean? It means that, you know, we've got a certain amount of land available to us for agriculture. We probably shouldn't use any more. We're seeing some effects from that now. So it means that with the space we've got to do more. We've got to do it more productively. And if someone is of the impression that getting rid of pesticides would be helpful in the long term, I think they probably need to read up on the subject a little bit, because ultimately, pesticides are the tools that growers use to produce their products as efficiently and cost effectively as possible. So what's the answer? You know, that's the answer that we're, or the question that we're trying to address is Eden. It's let's come up with some sustainable pesticides. And I'm happy to say, you know, we have two products that are being sold now around the world, primarily in Southern Europe, but increasingly in other territories as well. And, you know, we're able to help growers produce efficiently, effectively, cost effectively, with products that are indeed sustainable. And so that's the high level overview. There's a lot of detail behind that, of course. And we operate in a highly, highly regulated industry. So for us, regulation creates opportunities, but it also introduces cost and a lot of time and effort.
Mentioned sort of sustainable pesticides. I mean, what does that mean really? Because the anti-pesticide perhaps argument, I don't know for sure, but I know one of the angles is the destruction of the biodiversity. So, you know, the insects and the bees, all those kind of things. I mean, is that one of the biggest arguments against pesticides, or are there other ones? And when you talk about sustainable, how do you address some of those concerns?
Yeah, great question, Mark. And you know, there's a lot, everybody uses the word sustainable these days. In fact, I almost hesitate to use it because people throw the term around so loosely without really having a point of reference. Let's talk about chemicals as a whole. I've spent my entire career in the chemical industry. What could be the problem with any given chemical? Well, you know, it could be there are three things that we should consider. One is persistence in the environment, or thrown around commonly now in the general media, like PFOS, PFAS, etc. These things that were used to line your nonstick pans that turn out to be persistent in the environment. They don't go away. Why don't they go away? Well, they're sort of doing the job that they were designed to do, which is to be durable and to stick around. Ultimately, there are not great pathways in the environment, either through biology or through physical action, to degrade those products. Because actually what that means is they become persistent. And that means that they then can go to their main considerations. There's persistence in the environment, of course. There's bioaccumulation. So that's not just accumulation in the environment, actually in animals, plants, and humans. And we see examples. The chemicals that I mentioned to you a little while ago are good examples of chemicals that are at least suspected, if not demonstrated, to be bioaccumulative. And so that means that organisms don't have biological mechanisms for clearing those. And then, of course, the last concern is toxicity. And toxicity is, you know, it's obvious what that is. You know, it has a very deleterious effect on biological organisms, whether they be, you know, worms or bees or humans, you know, in the full spectrum in between. And so what does sustainable mean? You know, for me, what sustainable means is that, you know, we don't have products that are persistent or bioaccumulative or toxic, right? And we have products that do the job that they're designed to do, and then they go away, if you will. What does that mean? Well, it means they're degraded in the environment. And why is it that our approach to this means that our chemicals can be degraded in the environment, whereas there are others that can't be? Well, we're using natural chemicals, if you will. Natural meaning the three active ingredients that we have spent our entire lives working on, if you will, as a company, are produced by plants themselves. And so, you know, question, why do plants produce chemicals? Well, there's a lot of reasons. You know, we as humans also produce chemicals in our bodies. So, you know, the word isn't to be feared that this is a normal thing. These molecules are produced by plants as defense molecules. So plants do have an immune system, and these molecules make up part of that immune system. They can be repellents, they can be attractants, they can be bactericides, fungicides, insecticides. You know, plant chemicals in the process of their survival and growth. So we've taken three of those. We've developed products that are based on those, and we formulate with those three active ingredients and also sustainable microencapsulation system to help us solve problems that affect farmers. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. So what does sustainability mean? It means we do the things that farmers need to have done so that they can be efficient and productive, and by the way, that they can make a living without undue cost ultimately. And that's really the focus. The products that we have are environmentally friendly. The regulators require us to prove that. This isn't just take my word for it. It's we spend a lot of time doing is proving, one, that our products work, because some regulators require that we prove that they work, and two, we have to prove that they're safe for obvious reasons. And that bar is getting higher and higher all the time.
Yeah, Sean, before we take a deep dive into the product suite that Eden has, obviously, the market for crop protection must be huge. I mean, I think the world's due to peak at 9 billion. People, so I mean, the market's just got to be insane.
The market for crop protection products is huge, and depending upon who you listen to, let's use the number, $70-75 billion a year. The biopesticides portion of that is just over, it's estimated to be just over 11 billion in about 2 years' time, and it's growing rapidly. So, why are biopesticides growing so rapidly? I can also explain what biopesticides actually are, but let's just answer the question first. Why are they growing so much? It's because farmers recognize, of course, that they have to have a way of solving their problems, whether they be insect problems or pest problems, disease problems, or birds, or parasites. And, ultimately, regulators around the world, even consumer sentiment, is driving regulation. Regulators are saying, right, we need more sustainable products. We need products that are less harmful to the environment and to humans and to the plants, et cetera. And so biopesticides are an approach to that sustainability challenge. And so what is a biopesticide, really briefly? It's taking a biological approach to crop protection. That's really the way to look at it. So what's a biological approach? Well, in our case, we're using plant-derived active ingredients, the molecules that plants themselves produce. And there are others that are taking a similar approach. There are also ways to design proteins or peptides to tackle some problems like that. There are organizations that are using microorganisms, or indeed one that I always really like, which is, and I think is fascinating, using natural predators to target other insects that turn out to be pests. There are challenges with all of these, right? Coming up with an effective pesticide is not an easy job. It takes a lot of time and costs a lot of money. These systems are very complicated. It's not dissimilar to human health. But, instead of dealing with, humans, biology and chemistry, biochemistry, and the complicated organisms that we actually are. When you think about crop protection in a way, it's actually more complicated, because not only are we trying to create healthy crops, but target very specific pests, if you will, that are affecting those crops, but we're dealing with the environment, weather, variability inherent in nature. So it's sort of weather meets biology meets chemistry meets, you know, humans and weather. You know, you can imagine that's it's a complicated cocktail, which is partially why it's hard to do what we do. But, you know, it's a challenging industry. There's a strong demand for these kinds of products. And I think, you know, the world isn't going to go back to the days where there wasn't regulation of pesticides or there wasn't adequate regulation of pesticides. We're only going forward with raising the bar constantly. And in some respects, that's a good thing. And in other respects, it's a challenge for the industry. It's a challenge for farmers.
If we just move on a little bit to talk about the products then, or the suite of products that the company has here. There are a few different products, aren't there, and different applications for them. So, I mean, I wonder if we can just start by talking about the EcoVelex product here, and you can tell us a little bit about what that is, how it works, and sort of how it came about.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's one of my favorite topics at the moment. So EcoVelex is a product that we've been developing really in earnest for the last 3 years with Corteva. If you don't know who Corteva is, Corteva is the merged agriscience business of DuPont and Dow. So a good number of years ago, DuPont and Dow merged their businesses, and they then took their agriscience businesses, which range from crop protection chemicals to seeds. They're one of the largest seed companies in the world, to lots of other inputs and services, etc. They combined those. They created a new entity called Corteva. And so there are a partner of ours in the development of EcoVelex. And in fact, you know, we've broadened that relationship quite a lot over the course of the last 3 years to now include where they act as our distributor for our product Mevalone in France, for example. And hopefully that relationship will continue to uncover opportunities and you know, some productive collaboration. So what is EcoVelex? Well, it's an ingredient that goes into seed treatments. And so the next logical question is, what's a seed treatment? Good question. it's a coating that goes on seeds that is intended to give that seed its very best start in life. And so what goes into it, you can imagine this like a coating, you know, like if you're going to decorate your house. They're very similar to those kinds of coatings. They have lots of different components that go into them. They're very highly engineered to give the effect that they're intended to give. They're studied at great lengths to ensure that they're safe. Safe for the environment, safe for crops, safe for farmers, but that they do the job that they're intended to do, meaning, you know, ensuring that seed, and to remind you, you know, seeds are the most expensive input that farmers have. Mm. So you want to make sure that if you put 100 seeds in the ground, 100 come up, and they come up as quickly and healthily as humanly possible, and that they are given that very best chance. So what goes into these seed treatments? Well, you have nutrition products, you have plant growth regulators, you have stimulants, you have insecticides, fungicides, nematicides. We'll talk about what those are a little bit later. And as it turns out, for a good number of crops, you have repellents that help protect those seeds from birds, because as nobody's going to be terribly surprised, birds love seeds. And so if you're a farmer and you throw down 100 seeds, you, the last thing you want to see is a bunch of crows landing in your field and happily having a bit of a feast. And so the industry for many years has used bird repellents as a part of the seed treatment. And that's what EcoVelex is, the long and short of it. So how does that work? EcoVelex is composed of a combination of active ingredients that are derived from plants, the very same active ingredients I mentioned to you earlier, that happen to give off an objectionable odor to birds, and that also happen to taste bad, if you will, if a bird picks up the seed. And so it's that combination of giving off a strong odor that birds don't find pleasant, and that also, you know, triggers a response in their mouths when they pick up a seed, if they happen to pick up the seed. And that it triggers a very specific receptor that creates an effect a bit like eating a chili would, right? You know, so there's a very specific, we know how it works. There's a very specific receptor. And the idea is to get the birds to leave the seed alone, basically. And that's what we're doing effectively. So This is a great area where regulation affects the pace with which we can get this product to market, but it's also created the opportunity for us because regulators in Europe are in the process of banning the incumbent product. And the incumbent bird repellent product is, as I said, in the process of being removed from the market across Europe and likely elsewhere in the world, primarily because of those concerns that I mentioned earlier that are associated with conventional pesticides quite often. And so, you know, we've got a product that is just as effective, and we've had to prove that over the course of the last 3 years in the field. That's also safe. It is quite impactful when you think about, you know, what we don't want to do. We want to get the birds away, but we don't want to kill the birds. And some of the past products that have been used in seed treatments can have a negative effect on birds, for example, if the birds eat the seeds. And so what we really want to do is create a situation where we just want to give them the encouragement that they need to go off and find another food source. So find something else to eat, leave the farmer's seed alone, and everybody can be happy.
Yep.
Okay.
And I'm just catching up on some of your recent news as well, Sean. And obviously, you guys have just received your sort of first major order for this product line.
Yeah, that's right. I'm delighted you mentioned that. We announced relatively recently that we've received our first order for the product. To kind of explain where we're at in the process, I've mentioned several times the bane of our existence, but also the generator of opportunity, which is regulatory and regulation in general. And Europe is probably the most difficult regulatory regime to operate in. And this opportunity has been created in Europe initially because the regulators have said that the incumbent product has to go. So there we are working with Corteva trying to replace it. What we have done is we have prepared a full registration dossier that's sitting in the EU right now being reviewed. And in addition to that, a number of farming groups in the UK, but also in other territories across Europe, have petitioned to the regulators to allow the emergency approval for Ecovelox in those countries. And that's the way it works in most countries across Europe, is that the companies can't really apply for this, but farmers who recognize the need to repel birds have. And it was certainly the case in the UK, where we had a number of growing groups writing to the Secretary of State, to the Minister for Farming and Fisheries, saying, you know, please approve this product because we need it. And if we lose the incumbent product, we're not going to have anything to repel birds. And if we don't have anything to repel birds, growing maize becomes unviable. And it is as stark as that, I'm sorry to say. So although that's a horrible thing for farmers, for the companies that are trying to solve those problems, it's a great opportunity. So in advance of any possible granting of emergency use permits, we decided with Corteva we needed to sort of be in it to win it, if you will. And so if we didn't have inventory, you know, we weren't going to be able to meet the kind of treatment window that arises upon receipt of emergency authorization. So we agreed we would make a quantity of material. They agreed that they would take a minimum quantity this year and next year so that we're sure to have the inventory on hand. And that if we are granted the emergency approval, we can push the button, ship the product, get the seed treated, and get it into farmers' hands in very, very early 24, so that they're prepared to drill those seeds as soon as possible. So the supply chain isn't terribly long or complex, but you know, things take time, and it's very difficult to accelerate that. So we needed to make sure that the Ecovelox was produced, that it was, you know, goes through the quality process and is available. So that's why that order took place. And you know, we anticipate further orders from Corteva. We are very hopeful that we'll receive emergency approval, at least in one country. I don't know whether we'll get there everywhere. It's a emergency approvals are something that the regulators don't particularly like. As the name implies, they're only granted in what's deemed to be an emergency, where there aren't deemed to be other suitable alternatives. So we'll see. So I'm going to use an American football comparison here, but they're very much a Hail Mary pass. So, you know, it's a long throw into the end zone, and you hope the receiver is able to get their hands on the ball. That's what we've done in this case. And with a bit of luck, we'll be very happily solving this problem in a sustainable way and a very effective way for farmers in at least one country this year. And we'll do the same thing again next year if we have to. So the full registration process takes 18 to 24 months. It can actually take a little bit longer. It can actually happen a little bit quicker. It very much depends upon the actions of the regulator. But the regulator right now is going through the full registration dossier. And once we have that, I think it's a 10-year approval that we'll have at that point. And then we'll have to renew that product as well. Yep. So, that's where we're at. That was what the order was about. And, you know, I'm happy to say this is a product that I'm going to fly the flag a little bit, although that might be a bit ironic because I'm American, but I've lived here a long time. So, you know, I've started to enjoy the weather sometimes. The long and short of it is this is a product that we developed in the UK at our offices just outside of Oxford. And, you know, our team here on the ground developed it. We worked very closely with Corteva, but you know, we did the formulation work and we've done the registration work. And we're helped quite a lot by Corteva. They're, as you might imagine, a very capable organization. They've been a very good development and commercial partner. And the product has been produced in the UK through a contract manufacturing organization that we use. So we're very pleased to be able to say this is a real homegrown solution. I'm not sure that'll carry any weight with regulators or even with the government ultimately. We'll have to see. And I think it's fair to say, you know, that's only so important, but hopefully it's useful. And people can see that there are some great examples of great British companies doing really good stuff. So,
perfect. I mean, before we move on to Mevinlone, I'm assuming you guys have got kind of first mover advantage then in this market, because obviously, as you say, it's a kind of the regulators want to ban instantly, but you know, somebody's to move quickly, you know.
Kenny, it's a very good point, and having a first mover advantage is absolutely a real thing. We believe we are ahead. We know other people are developing products to fit this very requirement, because it's been known for a long time that the incumbent product, is going to go. Right. The exact timing of that sort of depends, because it continues to live on through emergency approvals. Why? Because right now there isn't a good alternative, or there wasn't a very good alternative. But even today, because we don't have our registration yet, we're kind of waiting in the wings. So yes, it'd be very nice to get a first mover advantage. We believe we're well positioned to get that. Working with Corteva, they are one of the largest seed companies in the world. So not only are they selling seed treatment products to other seed companies, but Pioneer Seeds is one of the largest players in the industry, and they are. They're part of Corteva. So we've got a captive audience there, if you will. And the guys there on the ground, working the seeds business are massively supportive. They're chomping at the bit to get their hands on this product, which is it's nice to have. And it's nice to hear the voices of support we're getting from a lot of people for this product.
Indeed. Excellent. Yeah, no, that's very good to hear. And the regulator, just finishing off on this is an EU-wide regulation, this emergency that will go through?
No, so the full authorization is EU-wide, right? So then of course there's the UK, which is now outside the EU,
which is now outside. Yes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Which by the way, without being political about it, because I definitely don't want to enter into one of those conversations. Sure. Again. But the is a different system now than the UK. The UK, you know, is doing its own thing. And that honestly, that complicates life for companies like us because it's a completely separate regulatory regime. And we have a good constructive relationship with them. And I think they're trying to be as helpful as they can be, but they've got a job to do. We want to help them do it, but you know, their job isn't to do what we ask. It's to do, you know, the right thing and then to follow the letter of the law. So there we are. In the EU, the way the process works is there's one rapporteur member state that reviews the application for all the member states, but this is the full authorization. Emergency approvals are done country by country by country. So the UK has a separate process. Each EU member state has a separate process. As a company have been quite successful in securing emergency approvals for both Mevalone and Cedros. We've had a little bit of a tougher ride in the UK, we're hoping that through constructive dialogue and good communications, we'll be able to get a bit of an easier path. Or not necessarily an easier path, but a path that gets us to where we would like to be and where farmers would like us to be.
Okay, but the product is effectively it's tested, it's ready to go, and really the last hurdle, if you like, is this emergency approval.
Absolutely, yes, correct.
Well, so you can't. Just reading the RNS there, you're not actually saying which jurisdiction it's in. I guess you can't comment on that. Is that the case?
No, I can't. Well, I can. We've applied for emergency approval and full approval in the UK, and we have applied for emergency approval in Italy, we haven't said what else we've done, I probably wouldn't, just for commercial sensitivity reasons. But in any case, it's pretty well known what we're trying to do, and there's no great secret in it. But I think. The long and short of it is, you know, we have a couple of opportunities where the incumbent product is under even more regulatory pressure and farmers have a real need for the product. And we're trying to address that need in those countries sooner rather than later. And so if we're not successful with this Hail Mary pass this year, I believe the intention will be to go forward again next year. And again, that's all dependent upon whether farmers are supportive and want to do that or not. But, you know, we've had really good support in the UK from a good number of well-recognized growing groups. We've had letters of support from the Maize Growers Association, for example, and then some of the other organizations that you would expect to be involved have also been quite supportive. And even a company whose business is biogas wrote to the minister for asking for support for Ecovelox. So it's been nice to see the industry support we'll get there when we get there. What I quite often say is, you know, it's not a question of whether we'll get there. It's really a question of when. And a lot of that is out of our control.
Yeah. Even if you don't get that touchdown, Sean, as long as you get a first down, that's all that matters. And you keep moving up the field.
That's it. Yeah. I completely agree. And that is it. Football is a game of play by play. You know, it's a game of a series of plays. And registration is very similar, actually. I'd never really thought about it that way, but it's absolutely right.
Definitely. All right, moving on with Mevalone, a different type of market. Can you give us an overview of this product as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So Mevalone was our first product that we registered, and it entered the market in 2015 in some territories, 2016, and then it's been sort of a rolling list of countries that have given their approval for it. This was a product that we started off, in fact, developing before I even joined the company. And it was actually in the early stages of the registration process when I joined. Unfortunately, at the time the product was developed, the company didn't really have the working capital available to it to invest in a comprehensive registration for the product. So the then management team made a decision to focus on one disease on one crop in one region around the world. And they picked it based on the fact that disease, which is called botrytis, is quite devastating. You know, if a farmer gets an outbreak of botrytis in their vineyard prior to harvest, and it's almost always in the days just approaching harvest when the grapes are the most ripe, and they've got a very high sugar content, botrytis outbreak can wipe away 50, 60, 70% of their crop in a matter of days. And if they don't have a product to treat it at that stage, it's a huge effect. So the management decided, well, this is a big problem. We need to solve the problem. So when we had our first authorization that in 2015, that was botrytis on grapes. That was it. That's what we had. And that's great because we're solving a big problem, but it's not great from a commercial perspective, because in reality, botrytis is quite a fickle disease. You might have it 1 year and then you might not have it again for 2 years or even longer. And with climate change, temperatures going up, drought increasing, botrytis doesn't like hot, dry conditions. So the way the weather goes is the way the botryticide market goes in a given year. And when I joined, we still didn't have that approval yet, but shortly thereafter we received it, and we really started the work at that point of broadening out the label. So it's not everybody's aware, but in our industry, your label really relates to the addressable market, and so you can almost replace the word label with, you know, addressable market. What does that mean? So the label tells the farmer not only how to use the product, but where they can use it. And it's quite granular. You know, just because you have use to treat botrytis on grapes doesn't mean you have the right to treat any other disease on grapes, right? And similarly, it doesn't grant you the right to treat botrytis on any other crop unless you go through the regulatory process of proving that the product works, proving that it's safe, doing all the risk tolerance calculations, and you know, proving to the regulator that not only does the product work, but it's safe, and so safe for the crop, safe for humans, safe for the environment. And so we've been working very, very hard to do that. So we've gone from, you know, really one crop use approval to today we've got 66. What does that mean? Our addressable market has grown, right, as a consequence of that. So mevalone is actually a fairly broad spectrum fungicide, despite the fact that we launched with a very narrow label. And so today we're treating a good number of, I couldn't even tell you the number now, but, you know, comfortably north of 10 different crops, not just for botrytis, but for a series of other diseases. And to give you a good illustration of how your label can affect the addressable market, our initial registration, for example, in France, covered just botrytis on grapes, right? And you know, botrytis isn't a massive problem in France, and it's becoming less and less of a problem. And that's just due to climatic conditions. It's also down to growing practices, by the way. There's a lot of complexity around that, and that will affect how affected farmers are by any given disease. So we have been working with our new distribution partner in France to broaden the label to include two completely new fungal pathogens called downy mildew and powdery mildew. We had already submitted the registration request. We had to, again, prove to the regulator that the product is that works on those two disease targets and that there's a need for the product. We've done that, and that is sitting in front of the French regulator right now. But to back to the illustration to show how important that increase in the label is, our addressable market in France will grow by about 10 times as a consequence of that label expansion. And again, it's just adding two new diseases on grapes. It's as simple as that. So there's a lot of scope for mevalone. We've done a reasonable job of expanding the label, growing sales year over year, making the product a bit more robust in terms of its demand profile year over year. And right now, the thing that we're very eagerly awaiting with our local distribution partner is approval in California in the U.S. As you might imagine, it's a huge market. there's a strong demand for the product. We've got a good label that's under consideration by the California regulator right now. And we are expecting that approval before year end. So again, I can't tell you with certainty that it'll happen before year end, but we are anticipating that. Again, it's a good example of these things are out of our control. So we've had a good constructive working relationship with the regulator there. There's been a lot of administrative back and forth on things, but we are expecting that approval before the end of the year. We already have approval in California for our second product, which is called Cedros. So it should have been, could have been, let's say, a bit of a faster process, but we are where we are.
Yeah, and it's not just grapes, obviously. Meb alone, obviously, it's a fruit and a vegetable segment market.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we're now selling Meb alone for use on cucurbits, you know, so melons and courgette and cucumbers, etc. And we're also selling it to lettuce is another good example. We're also selling it to treat different diseases on those crops. So we have, for example, one of the key fungal pathogens that causes your lettuce to go brown. That's just one example. So, and we're working very hard to do that. So in France, as soon as we get powdery mildew and downy mildew on the label, the very next thing we're going to do is expand the list of crop targets. So we're moving well beyond grapes. And sometimes these are huge opportunities. Other times they're just sort of rounding out the use of the product, and you're improving the usefulness of the product to farmers. So you can imagine with your home garden, you know, if you have a product that just works to, let's say, kill ants, but you can't use it to do anything else, it becomes a bit of a nightmare in your shed, right? You suddenly have, you know, 15 products sitting on the shelves. And for a farmer, we're talking about vast quantities of pesticides. And by the way, a huge investment from a cost perspective to treat significant hectarages. So, we want Mevalone to have the biggest label it possibly can. And that's where we're working with our partners to make that happen.
Excellent. Sounds like you're busy with that anyway. Yep. Sorry, Mark, I'll let you crack on.
No, indeed. No, it's good to hear all about the products and the different stages they're at. I'm sure we could almost spend a bit of time talking more in detail each of the products and the applications of each of them and how they can be applied and what the market is. But I mean, we are already up on about 40 minutes or so here on this podcast. And I do definitely want to touch on some very recent news only a few days ago with a company. You actually raised quite a significant amount of money, didn't you? It's a shame we didn't get to the 10 million. It's 9.9 million.
I was going to say, I'm going to be very grateful for what we were able to raise.
Sure.
And we're pleased with that. But yeah, gross proceeds were 9.9. And it would have been nice to get the 10. We had really strong demand from, in particular, EIS and VCT investors for this round. So the history of this was we began working with what's now Cavendish, but formerly known as Senkos, with the very beginning stages of the summer. And what we were looking to do is mention this order that we had from Corteva for EcoVelox. We were anticipating that order. And again, the order was to make enough EcoVelox so that we could, you know, again, be in it to win it, if you will, if we did get emergency approval. So we were looking at our cash position. We always knew we were going to be getting quite tight toward the end of the year with a more positive outlook as we entered into 24. But as we were looking at the cash position getting tighter and tighter, and then looking at this opportunity to produce product, we thought, you know what, we ought to go to the market. We can manage this, but it does get uncomfortably tight at that point. And, you know, we don't want to be in a position where we have to raise money. We want to be in a position where we want to raise money to fund what we're doing. But when you're in a situation, everybody knows, where you need money, then, life is more complicated, right? You know, it's sort of blood in the water time. And, yeah. and you know, we don't wind up getting the kind of price in the market that we and our investors would expect to see. So we decided we would go after it and use our authority to provide us with the working capital to fulfill that order and provide a bit of buffer in the case, in the event that some things that we anticipate happening take longer than we would anticipate. And that's almost always the case with regulatory. So we sat down with Cavendish, said, what are we going to do? And they said, well, we think you ought to raise, we think you should raise more. Of course, they would say that. They're brokers. And we said, okay, we can always use the money. There's no question about that. But the market conditions are not very favorable, as everybody knows. And pricing valuations at the moment on AIM are painful for everybody. And we really are always mindful of dilution. It's not something that we don't want to dilute our shareholders. We don't want to dilute ourselves as directors who all hold reasonable positions in the company. And so we decided that let's see what the tolerance is and the interest is from EIS and VCT investors. And in fact, Cavendish made a very good point, which is, if you only look to non-EIS and VCT investors, you're going to frustrate or anger your largest shareholders, who are EIS and VCT funds. And so we did the rounds. Long and short of it is, we did the rounds. There was really strong interest expressed. We certainly could have raised more. We wound up having to restrict the demand from some of the aspiring investors because we have a kind of a limit on what we could raise. And so, we're really happy with the outcome of that. Obviously, we raised it at a very slight premium to the last fundraise in extremely difficult market conditions with great support from existing investors. So we saw folks like Gresham House and also Amati increase their positions. We also saw two brand new funds come in, Octopus and Unicorn, who actually themselves made up about 50% of that raise. So it was great to see the demand, great to welcome new high quality investors onto the register, and to welcome back a good long list of existings who wanted to participate and were really supported in the process. So what this allows us to do is continue to do what we've been doing for the last 3 years. So to help people understand where we were and where we're going. If you go back to the last fundraise, which we completed in March 2020, which I can't remember the exact date, but it was literally the date before the lockdown. So I had some very odd photos of St. Paul's with no people standing around it on that day that we closed that raise. But in any case, immediately we began building out our team. That was part of the strategy behind that fundraise, was to transition from being a company that outsources absolutely everything to a company that is capable of driving the development of their product and the registrations of their product. So we went from a team of, 5 years ago, we were a team of two people. Then we added a couple of commercial people. And, when we did that fundraiser, we were a team of four. Today, we're a team of just short of 20. So, and that investment has been made in the development labs. So we've opened up our own labs. We're now able to accelerate the pace of product development. And we always had previously used a model that was much more suitable for the kind of company that we used to be. At the time I joined, we were really very much a licensing company. So it was develop IP and license it. And that model was never going to produce the kind of returns that we wanted. So the board and I decided we would shift the business model to a product development and product sales model. I'm still using outsourced manufacturing and initially continuing to use outsourced development. But outsourcing all of your development work is a bit of a fool's errand. It takes a lot of time. There's a real challenge with alignment between the contract research organization's priorities and our priorities. And, you know, I had been working toward building a team that we could rely on to get our products to market as quickly as possible. So we're not really involved, despite the name, we're not really involved in basic research. We do development. You know, we take our delivery system that we've developed, and we take our three active ingredients that we've registered, and we make them more useful, you know. And so Ecovalix, for example, is an evolution of our first product, Mevalone. If you look at everything we're doing, we're relying on some combination of those three active ingredients. And now we've got a team of people who are able to do that. And so that's what this fundraise was about. It was about being able to continue with that level of resourcing, to strengthen our commercial team, and to really continue with our foot on the accelerator, because, you know, sure, there are time limiting factors like registration that do affect our pace of progress, but we should stop sort of, you know, tripping over our own tail, and let's make sure that we're capable of doing our bit of the job as quickly as humanly possible. And I'm pleased to say this fundraiser has helped us a lot with that.
Yeah, definitely an amazing result in these markets. It's, you know, £10 million pound is a tremendous amount. Just to finish off, you know, you've got one final product in your portfolio, and this is more. I mean, the first one was, you know, to repel the bulbs. The second one was more of a kind of sort of fungicide, but this is more like a root treatment or to stop root disease.
Yeah. Cedros. So Cedros is a nematicide. I did promise to come back to the riveting target of nematodes. Nematodes are basically soil dwelling pests, some of which are plant parasites. So they you don't see them because they're microscopic, but oddly and somewhat terrifyingly, if you took some soil from your back garden and looked at it under a microscope, it's slightly terrifying when you can see these little nematodes, because there are billions of them. But the parasitic ones affect crop yields. They affect crop health. And so what happens is they feed on the root system, they dwell within the root system of the plant, and they affect its health in general. So Federalist is technically our second product. We did a deal back in 2016 with Eastman Chemical, which has a crop protection business, some of which involves soil health. And we partnered with them to bring this product to market in 29 different countries around the world. So Cedros, we're making good progress with that product. We're back to making good progress with that product after some manufacturing challenges, which I'm happy to say are resolved. Thanks to our team. And we're getting on with it. So quite excited about the future for that product, because of course we also have registration in the US for that product, where the market is even bigger. And we see some real opportunities to continue to expand the label there. And in fact, Eastman, speaking of emergency approvals, had a nice emergency approval this year in Italy for use on a completely new target, which is a soil-dwelling larval stage of an arthropod. And it has a huge effect on loads of different crops, but in particular potatoes. And we saw some really good efficacy in the field. So we're very excited to be getting back on the front foot with Cedros now that we've got these manufacturing issues resolved, and to growing the market further. So and by the way, just to finish off on the product side, we are in the later development stages of yet another product, our fourth product, which is as of yet unnamed. I'm sure we'll come up with a very creative name, but the product is an insecticide that targets what are called sucking pests on a wide range of crops. And there we've run comfortably north of 140 field trials during the course of this year. We ran some last year as well, and the initial reports are all quite encouraging. So we'll stay tuned on that one. I think we should have something to say about that probably early in 24 as we analyze the data from the current year and enter into commercial discussions with potential partners.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Sean. I don't know if you want to just spend the last couple of minutes or something, just giving investors a bit of an idea perhaps of what's to come. You've got a lot of firepower behind you now. You've got some orders in, just waiting for a couple of hurdles. It all sounds like it's moved on an awful lot to the positive since we spoke 2 years ago here. So I mean, it's a sort of a round off. What would be the focus for, I mean, let's not leave it 2 years until we talk again, but let's say what's the focus throughout the end of this year and really what you'd like to achieve in 2024, and perhaps some key bits of news for that you're looking out for that investors can also anticipate.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks, Mark. So first of all, and we'll kind of cover in the order that we talked about it, with Ecovelox, we're very much hoping that we'll receive at least one emergency authorization that will allow us to actually sell a significant volume of Ecovelox for the current year, which is basically the 2024 growing season, right? And so, you know, if those happen, then Hail Mary pass caught, and, you know, some great news on the back of it. You know, it's, I don't know what percentage to assign to this because it's all out of our control. But, you know, if it doesn't happen, then rest assured we'll be there for the 2025 growing season, looking to sell more product in 2024 to address needs under an emergency approval that we'll be going forward next year. And then, of course, the full authorization. So Ecovelox has got a very promising future in front of it. Corteva is talking about the product very, very actively because of the strong demand for it and its efficacy in the field. And by the way, the fact that it's actually safe compared to past approaches, let's say. In addition to that, I mentioned the authorization for Mevalone in California. We're very hopeful that we've got a pending order for product conditional upon receiving approval in California. And that'll be great news. It'll be great to get into the California market for the 24 growing season. And we're really looking forward to that. And our distribution partner in the US is chomping at the bit. They've resourced themselves up to be able to go to market. And we've all been sitting around drumming our fingers on the table. So there's a lot of good news to come in that regard as well. And then, of course, with the insecticide, we're looking to make some announcements, hoping to make some announcements, all subject to the outcome of the trials this year and whether we've got good trial results or whether we need to go back into the field for another season. We won't know that until the end of the year. So, that's kind of, you know, the focus for us is continuing to expand our markets, both geographically and addressing broader opportunities in the industry with the products that we have. And we've got a number of earlier stage development products as well. So we're really looking forward to getting on with it. Frankly, the fundraise took quite a long time because of its complexity. And it's very nice to have the money in the bank. Bluntly, it's very nice to have received such strong support from shareholders and potential investors, and I'm honestly just happy to get back to the business of our business, if you will, and look forward to hopefully talking to you guys sooner than 2 years.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time, Sean, today, for joining us again on the podcast. And unless Kenny, you have any final thoughts, I think we can leave it there.
Yeah, no, I just let's not wait 2 years. Yeah, that's basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to be in my 60s. You know, the 40s, 40s, 40s to 50s was fine, but let's not wait till I'm 60.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. So no, thank you very much.
Perfect.
Thank you, Sean.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.
Think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims. Sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.